from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon. This is Eben Fowler filling in for Tony Perkins today. Eben Fowler from Bot Radio Network. Glad to be with you. Normally, I'm here on Fridays once in a while, but the need came up for today on Tuesday. Glad to be with you. We've got a great program planned for you. In just a moment, I'll be talking with Republican Congressman Scott Perry of Pennsylvania. He serves on the Foreign Affairs Committee about the unprecedented last-minute meeting in the North Korean DMZ, that's the demilitarized zone, between President Donald Trump and North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. Or Jong-un. Let's get that right. Sunday night. We'll just call him Kim. Not surprisingly, Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer blasted the commander-in-chief. I've got a soundbite from CNN, so we can see how silly Chuck Schumer sounded. Then in the second segment, I'll talk with Elizabeth Johnston. She is otherwise known as the activist mommy, whose biblically based commentaries on the lies about abortion, feminism, Islam, and the homosexual agenda have been viewed 70 million times. And now that she has successfully shut down some of the outrageous drag queen story hours in public libraries, you heard it right, drag queen story hours, the left has threatened Elizabeth and her 10 children personally. At the bottom of the hour for the remainder of the show, I'll be talking with Dr. Calvin Beisner. He's the founder of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, a network of over 60 Christian theologians and natural scientists. He'll differentiate between the impact of capitalism and socialism on the environment, and we'll also talk about the five most common charges against capitalism. So we'll be kind of going to school the last half hour of the broadcast, so get your notebook out, get your pencil out, because it'll be some important learning that you'll have an opportunity to do. Actually, I heard Dr. Beisner this weekend on a broadcast, the Janet Mefford's program, rather, on Bot Radio Network. And I was fascinated by that conversation. We're going to expand that conversation a bit and sort of reel in the clown car of 20 Democrat candidates who so-called debated last week in groups of 10, handy little groups of 10, because they talked about a lot of this stuff. They talked about the environment, the climate, socialism. So we'll be talking about that as well. Should be an interesting conversation. And you'll also have an opportunity to call in and engage in that conversation. We'd love you to do that. We'll give you that number later into the program, so hang with us. Well, let's get into the first segment. Side by side with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un in the heavily fortified demilitarized zone, President Donald Trump became the very first sitting U.S. president to cross the 1953 armistice line separating North and South Korea. He then joined Kim for a roughly 50-minute meeting. Democratic Minority Leader of the Senate, Chuck Schumer of New York, was irate. He appeared yesterday on CNN with Anderson Cooper. Listen to what old Chuck had to say.
This was one of the worst few days in American foreign policy and American diplomatic history in a long time. Praising dictators, messing up foreign policy left and right. What he did in North Korea, giving Kim Jong-un just what he wanted, calling him a friend, patting him on the back, and getting nothing, absolutely nothing in return. North Korea is still nuclear.
Don't you think that's a little over the top, Chuck? I mean, come on. So we're going to be talking about that. So joining me to analyze President Trump's appearance in North Korea in the DMZ, as well as Senator Schumer's remarks, is Republican Congressman Scott Perry. He represents the 10th District of Pennsylvania and also serves on the Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman Perry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. And let's just dive right in, if you don't mind.
Let's
address Senator Schumer's remarks. And just to remind everybody, just of the last administration, when the president at that time, President Obama, shook hands with Raul Castro and getting nothing in return to open up relations in a consulate in Cuba, communist Cuba, that oppresses its people, responsible for extrajudicial killings and horrific oppression. I don't remember hearing the same outrage. As a matter of fact, all I heard, remember hearing from Senator Schumer and those in the Democrat Party were complete accolades about how wonderful it was that we would support the murderous dictator 100 miles off the coast of the United States, who support communism and totalitarianism, as well as hosting the largest listening posts for China and Russia on the planet, which are located just south of Florida, and listen to the United States and try and steal secrets and national security items from us on a continual basis. So quite honestly, whatever criticisms Senator Schumer have regarding President Trump and Kim in this regard are completely without any merit and without any credit. That having all been said, I think it does give many Americans pause to see the president shake hands with someone who arguably should be on trial for crimes against humanity. He should be at The Hague right now, not in North Korea. But at the same time, let's remember the context of this whole thing. 2.5, 3 years ago, we, the United States, were on a war footing. We were really literally on a war footing with North Korea. And let's also discuss the course of history for you know, ever since the armistice, America's posture in particular, but the West's posture vis-a-vis North Korea and all the things we've tried. And I'm sure that we got glowing reports on Madeleine Albright's visits to North Korea and all the good work that was done during the Clinton administration, which, by the way, ensured and enshrined a nuclear-armed Korea forever. So while we might find it, and I will tell you, I find it personally displeasing to see Kim Jong-un elevated in any regard by standing next to the president and the leader of the free world, I do think it's appropriate and instrumental to know that we are not at war with North Korea, and those are options that need to be considered in the context of what is happening right now. And so in that context, I think you really have to decide what has worked in the past, and you can say nothing and be pretty darn accurate, and what are our options, and we have few, and the least of which is sending our best and our brightest young people to fight for freedom in North Korea. We don't want to have to do that if we don't have to, yet we want to make sure that North Korea is a place that can't deliver nuclear-armed weapons around the globe. And if it means that we got to put up with kind gestures and handshakes with a dictator, then just ask yourself, is that more palatable to you than seeing bodies coming home under flag-draped coffins at Dover Air Force Base from the Korean Peninsula? And yeah, I suggest to you that the latter is less tasteful than the former.
Absolutely. Well, and I had a thought as well about Chuck Schumer's comments where he said that we got nothing. Well, we haven't gotten very far in this whole venture that President Trump is on with Kim. And in fact, President Trump has said he's in no hurry. This could be a long, long process. So for Senator Schumer to say that we've got nothing is extraordinarily premature. And as you mentioned, President Obama gave all sorts of things to Cuba and got nothing in return. That transaction already took place, and we got nothing. So it is kind of silly. And I appreciate your balanced view, too, that Kim is a dictator. He is as ruthless as anybody on the planet. He's done horrible things. But, you know, my thought, as I've thought about this, Republican, Mr. Congressman, the it seems like it's a lot better to be engaged with somebody like this. And I think, you know, Trump is a negotiator. The better you get to know your negotiating adversary, it's likely the better off you're going to be in terms of knowing how to negotiate with them. So it seems to me that every time this is the third time that they have met. The second time didn't end so well, but the third time they've met, he's had more of an opportunity to size up this guy, would you think?
I would certainly think so. And again, it is a long-term prospect. And let's face it, it's been a long-term prospect where, unfortunately, every overture that the United States has made, every overture that the world has made, because we haven't gone it alone on many occasions, has come up with us giving North Korea our time, our talent, our treasure. And when I say our talent, in the way of know-how and the way of materials and goods And, of course, our treasure in the way of goods for their starving people and technology that they've stolen from us one way or another. Those things have been given to North Korea, and we've gotten absolutely nothing in return. As a matter of fact, we got the exact opposite of what we were looking for. And while, like I said, we're not used to this new paradigm of negotiating with dictators, so to speak, just as much as you might find that unpalatable, tell me what other option we have.
Right. Well, President Trump said that while the sanctions on North Korea would remain in place for now, he did seem to leave open the possibility that some could be removed during the talks. And that's a bit of a change, isn't it?
I think it is. And I think he's, it's the old carrot and stick approach. It's pretty simple stuff. I think the other side of the equation is that there's more yet to do, that there's more yet that we can do and we will do if we have to. But he's trying to get this guy to see that there's another alternative to the direction that our country has been headed and he's currently headed. And that's what he's trying to put out there, that there is some flexibility for him if he will kind of start seeing it our way. Now, of course, the real challenge, among other challenges that this president has in this whole negotiation, is with Russia and China, who are, well, they're, of course, bordering North Korea. And because of that, they could be very helpful in the sanctions regime and applying pressure. But they can also provide North Korea a lifeline, which they continue to do,
right,
which undermines our cause. And the president has to walk a very fine line in how much pressure he can place on Kim, knowing that the back door is open and the pressure is being relieved by his benefactors in China and Russia, who just refuse to cooperate and obviously don't have the same goals that we do.
I want to ask you, this is probably the last question that we'll have time for, Congressman Perry, but what do you think with respect to President Trump's Iran policy? There's been a lot of back and forth, kind of bruising things going back and forth with respect to Iran. How does that impinge on the relationship with North Korea? How does it impact what we're trying to do there?
Well, it impacts not only North Korea, but the rest of the world, because everybody is watching very keenly. And with all due respect to other administrations, weakness is provocative. And that's why we're in the position with North Korea and Iran, in my opinion. This president, I think, is playing it right. Look, you can see that he goes in strong. He goes in very stridently, because you can always relax. But what's difficult, you learn this, in school. When the teacher comes in and is tough on the first day, there's room to relax. But if the teacher comes in a relaxed fashion on the first day, he can never get more strict, or she can never get more strict after that point, because people just don't respond the same way to it. The president is dealing with Iran exactly the same way. And again, he demands results. And I think that over time, we're going to see them from Iran. We got nothing out of the Obama deal except losing hundreds of billions of dollars in cash on pallets to Iran, and Iran being a nuclear-capable nation.
Absolutely. Republican Congressman Scott Perry from Pennsylvania, thanks so much for your time and your input. We appreciate it. Well, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network, filling in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, I'll be talking with Elizabeth Johnston, the activist mommy, whose biblically based commentaries on all sorts of things that are very important have been viewed 70 million times. She's being, shall we say, threatened because of her views on a variety of these things, in particular, drag queen story hours. More about that right after this break on Washington Watch.
Can United States senators interrogate court nominees on their religious beliefs? This is a controversial question that our country is facing today. In light of this controversy, FRC has taken up the task of answering this question with one of their latest publications, Rebels Without a Clause. We've seen in recent Senate confirmation hearings a troubling pattern arise where senators have begun questioning presidential nominees about their faith as an attempt to discredit them. These interrogations have gone so far as to asking nominees of their theological beliefs, church membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits. It has been an alarming display of hostility toward religion and people of faith. Visit frc.org/test to learn what questioning the Constitution's No Religious Test Clause allows and forbids in the process of confirming judicial nominees. That's frc.org/test.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Many advances made by the homosexual movement are based on the claim that sexual orientation is immutable or unchangeable. This belief was a deciding factor in the 2015 Supreme Court case that redefined marriage to include same-sex couples. It has been a key argument for LGB activists fighting to restrict or ban therapies for people seeking help to overcome their same-sex attraction. But is sexual orientation written in stone? Should we brand people with an immovable sexual orientation label and tell them, you can't change, don't try to change, even if they want to? In a new publication from FRC, we reveal that sexual orientation can change. Survey data shows that heterosexuality is largely stable, but homosexuality is not. Even pro-LGB scholars are calling for the immutability argument to be abandoned. The question is, why is the LGB movement pushing this false argument? To learn more, visit frc.org/sexualorientation. That's frc.org/sexualorientation.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler in for Tony Perkins. Glad to have you listening today. By the way, you can listen to these broadcasts in archive form at frc.org/radio, or also at botradionetwork.com, a couple of different places. And Tony's Twitter handle, at T. Perkins, mine, at Evan Fowler. Love to hear from you in that way, in that particular way. Well, good to have you back here. No doubt you've heard of Elizabeth Johnston. She's also known as the activist mommy. Her biblically focused commentary videos in which she confronts the lies of abortion, feminism, Islam, and the homosexual agenda have gone viral with 70 million views so far. She's also the author of a new book called Not on My Watch, How to Win the Fight for Faith, Family, and Freedom. She and her husband, Patrick, have been pro-life ministry leaders for many years, and they home educate their 10 children. Sounds like she's a busy mom. And you can learn more about her and sign up for her email updates at her website. It's activistmommy.com. Through years of hate mail, threats, and public slander, Elizabeth has not caved once under the pressure. This diligence and hard work has paid off and helped to spark a movement of moms and families who have snapped out of their comfort zones and complacency and joined the fight. Scripture tells us that we'll be counted as fools for Christ when we speak His truth and stand against the, quote, wisdom of the world, and that the world hates us only because it hated Him first. But now, the attacks against my next guest have taken a disturbing and personal turn. Elizabeth, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. It's always an honor to be with you.
Well, first of all, this primarily focuses on some of the things that you've done to alert people, families, moms, and others about these so-called drag queen story hours in public libraries. Let's start out with what in the world that is.
Well, that's a very good question. We've lost our minds in this country. The American Library Association, which is a very radical leftist organization and unfortunately funded by our tax dollars, has decided to support this idea of drag queens. These are men dressed up as women coming into our publicly funded libraries and reading gender-bending propaganda to the children. But it's worse than that. This has gotten to the point where we have drag queens teaching classes on how to do drag in our libraries. They are dancing, doing drag dances. You know, drag dancing is basically a nightclub, an adult nightclub culture of stripping and whatnot, very, very immoral, very lewd, very vile behavior. And this is taking place. Obviously, they're not stripping stripping naked in the drag queen story hours, but they are doing very lewd and vile things, even having a raffle for breast binders for children, which is where little girls bind themselves with these binders so that they look like boys. This is destructive. This is unhealthy. This is confusing. This is perversion, and it is taking place in our taxpayer-funded libraries.
Well, you know, there's a scripture that talks about that it would be better to have a millstone hung around the neck of those who do this sort of thing. And I think this kind of thing falls right into the category of what the Bible's talking about, just taking, twisting, and warping the minds of innocent children. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. This is one of the strongest instances of propaganda that I've seen in my 40-something years of living, and we will not stand for it. And what is happening right now is that I have been putting out calls on social media and through email for my followers to call these libraries and respectfully express their complaint that this is not what libraries are supposed to be for. Our taxpayer-funded libraries are supposed to be for educational purposes, not for radical leftist propaganda to be shoved down the throats of our children. And what has happened is that we've successfully gotten some of these drag queen story hours canceled. And because of that, I personally am taking a lot of heat for that. In my family, we are being ruthlessly doxxed and threatened. Emails such as, you and your 10 children need a bullet through your head. I will murder you and your children. And one of the drag queens that goes by the drag name Selena West, his name is actually Kyle, has even put out a call for people to call children's services on me because I did what? Because I asked citizens who pay taxes to call their library and express their concern. This is the left today. This is the radical left. They don't want us to just, you know, allow them to do what they want to do in their bedroom. No, if we don't allow them to have us pay for their immoral, perverted activities, then we're going to have your children taken away from you.
All right. Well, let me ask you, let's say a mom and a dad, how can they determine whether these sorts of things are being scheduled in their public libraries? What's the easiest way to find out?
Definitely check your library schedule. You can find that online. You can look at their calendar of events. And if you see a drag queen event, a drag queen story hour, a drag 101, or, you know, this was the month of June where we were having a lot of these events because of Pride Month, but they're not over. They are
so,
they are,
I would say, so-called Pride Month. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. But find this. And if you see one, immediately call your library, call your mayor, call your city council members and express your concern and ask your friends and family and church members to call. It's really exciting to watch the mama bears and papa bears rising up in our country, getting off the sidelines and saying, no, no, this is not what our country was founded on. We don't stand for this. We're not going to let the delusional 1% dictate to the 99% what our country is going to look like.
Okay, in about 30 seconds, if you were, you know, to counsel a mom or a dad when they're calling the library, of course, we want to be firm, but we also want to be gracious. And again, about 20 seconds, how do you ask the library to cancel this kind of an event?
Sure.
What logic do you use?
I would tell the library that to be reading gender-bending, confusing books to children is not appropriate, especially on our taxpayer dime, and to please pull the program.
Very good. Well, thank you, Elizabeth Johnston. You can get email updates by signing up at her website, activistmommy.com. You're listening to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler sitting in today for Tony Perkins from Bot Radio Network. Coming up next, a real interesting discussion with Dr. Calvin Beissner, founder of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. It's a network of over 60 Christian theologians and natural scientists. We're going to be talking about the impact of capitalism and socialism on the environment, and also a little bit about the debates, the Democrat debates from last week, and how that all ties in. And he'll also respond to the five most common charges against capitalism and your calls on the next segment of Washington Watch.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. While the specific threats to religious freedom vary in type and intensity, one common source is the legal and cultural support for apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, which often threaten the freedom to choose or change one's faith. In a new publication from Family Research Council, we list which nations around the world have these unjust laws on the books and spotlight people who have faced severe penalties simply for sharing or changing their faith. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws. That's frc.org/ABA laws.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network filling in today for Tony Perkins on this Tuesday afternoon. Democratic Socialist Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York has proposed the Green New Deal, a radical leftist response to global warming, climate change, environmental, whatever you want to call it. Among the Democratic presidential candidates, Senators Bernie Sanders of Vermont, Cory Booker of New Jersey, Kamala Harris of California, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, and Kirsten Gillibrand are co-sponsors of the bill. In terms of the rest of the Democratic presidential field, the supporters of the Green New Deal include activist Marianne Williamson. Boy, she was interesting, wasn't she, if you were watching the debate. Former Housing Secretary Julian Castro and former tech executive Andrew Yang. He was interesting, too. But what is the Christian response? Joining me for the remainder of Washington Watch today is Dr. Calvin Beissner, founder of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. It's a network of more than 60 Christian theologians, natural scientists, and economists educating for biblical earth stewardship, economic development for the poor, and the proclamation and defense of the good news of salvation through faith in Jesus Christ. That's a just kind of a nice group of things to be knowledgeable about. The website, just for your reference, and we'll give you this again later in the broadcast, cornwallalliance.org. Dr. Beissner was Associate Professor of Historical Theology and Sociology and Social Ethics at Knox Theological Seminary and of Interdisciplinary Studies at Covenant College. He's also an elder in the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. He and his wife, Debbie, have 7 children and 9 grandchildren. Dr. Beissner, welcome to Washington Watch.
Evan, thanks very much. Great to be on the program with you.
Good to have you. And as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, I heard you fascinated by what you were talking about that I just had to have you on today. So I'm glad we were able to work this out. Primarily, I think the conversation you had over the weekend was specifically about environmentalism and the environment, and then socialism versus capitalism in terms of which is the friendlier to the environment. And we're definitely going to be talking about that in some detail. But I also wanted to tie in the, I like to call it the dual clown cars of the 10 Democrat candidates each two evenings last week in what was supposed to be a debate, but kind of turned into a free-for-all in many cases, because most of those candidates, if not every single one of them, are espousing socialist policies that will cure everything from health care issues to the environment to, you know, you name it, to guaranteed income that Andrew Yang was proposing, which has got to be one of the worst things, one of the worst ideas that I've heard in a long time. So I wanted to tie in what the Democrats are espousing and saying that they're going to do to us if any one of them happens to get elected, and these topics that that you talked about over the weekend, which I think are very, very important. And what I want to start out with here is actually a soundbite from one of those many, in this case, 20 candidates. It was the governor of the, I guess, former governor of Colorado. Don't know if he's still out there or not, John Hickenlooper. And it was during the debate, he wanted to make sure that he was leery of socialism, despite the virtual embrace of that worldview by almost every one of the other contenders. Bobby, roll that clip, if you would.
The bottom line is, if we don't clearly define that we are not socialists, the Republicans are going to come at us every way they can and call us socialists. And if you look at the Green New Deal, which I admire the sense of urgency and how important it is to do climate change, I'm a scientist, but we can't promise every American a government job. If you want to get universal health care coverage, I believe that health care is a right and not a privilege. But you can't expect to eliminate private insurance for 180 million people.
Okay, from my astute analysis of that clip, the only thing that made sense was the very last thing he said, where he said, you know, we can't get rid of private health insurance, but everything else was a contradiction, I think. Calvin, tell us a little bit. Let's start out, first of all, with a definition of socialism, because I think a lot of people are confused as to what that means. These candidates, you know, take Bernie Sanders. When he's directly asked what it is, he dodges the question. But even, you know, Hickenlooper wants to define what they believe as something else or call it something else to deflect the concerns. But so, first of all, tell us what it is and what it isn't.
Yeah, it's very easy to be confused about this because, frankly, there is not a black and white, this is socialism, that's capitalism deal. The two occur on a spectrum of thought. The most technical definition of socialism is state ownership of all the means of production. So, in other words, the state would own all the businesses that make various goods and provide various services. And the only thing private individuals would own would be things like their clothing, their homes, their food. And so the state would own everything else. And then the opposite end would be the state owns essentially nothing except the military and its equipment and the police and their equipment. And private people own everything else, all the means of production. Those would be the opposite extremes. But another way of seeing socialism is to see that it's state guiding, state planning of the economy, regardless who owns the means of production. And that is certainly what all of those candidates want.
That, absolutely right. Well, we're going to take a break here, and that's why I wanted to have you for the whole broadcast, because we are just getting started. I'm going to put our phone number out, 866-372-7234. That's 866-372-7234. As you're listening, and if you think of questions or topics related to what we're discussing that you want to talk about, give us a call. We get further into the last segment, 866-372-7234. Talking with Dr. Calvin Beisner of the Cornwall Alliance. We'll be right back after this break here on Washington Watch.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there's no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they're born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts.
We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive. Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
Did you know that thanks to President Trump, abortion giant Planned Parenthood can no longer receive up to $60 million in federal funding? This new federal protection for the unborn is thanks to a rule change that the Trump administration implemented to the Title X Family Planning Grant Program, which will take effect in May 2019. Not only do the new Title X rule changes take funding away from our nation's largest abortion supplier, they also ensure that taxpayer dollars are not used for abortion and open the door for pro-life pregnancy resource centers and other faith-based organizations to apply for Title X funds, thus expanding the health care options of needy families who are experiencing unexpected pregnancies. For more information about the new Title X rule changes that protect the unborn and increase health care options, visit frc.org/Title X. That's frc.org/Title X.
This is Washington Watch. Evan Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins today from Bot Radio Network. Glad to have you along. This is the last segment. Our phone number, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Glad to be talking with Cal Beisner of the Cornwall Alliance. We're talking about socialism versus capitalism and the environment, all that good stuff. Let's talk a little bit about, you got into the definition of socialism there a bit, and if you want to wrap that up, go ahead. But then what I want to talk about is the fact that every stinking one of the Democrats in that debate, and every single one of them, not only are they all pro-abortion, that's very, very clear, but they also think, in some cases, they think that climate change is the existential threat that we're all facing. No, it's not North Korea. No. It's not China. It's not whatever else. It's or the people flooding across the southern border. It's the weather. So I'd like you to talk about, since your organization talks a lot about that, give us some science about what's going on with the climate. Is it really that big a deal? And then let's get into this discussion about socialism versus capitalism, and which one's better for the environment?
Boy, that's a tall order there.
There you go. You got 15 minutes.
Okay, first, let's finish up on trying to define socialism. You know, as I said, the technical definition is state ownership of the means of production. But a less technical definition, yet a widespread way of understanding socialism, is government planning of the economy. A basic way to distinguish socialism from capitalism or free market economics is this. Every economic system has to answer the question, who decides who makes what, using what resources, at what costs, for whom, at what prices, all right? Socialism says, basically, the government makes those decisions. Capitalism says, basically, private people make those decisions. Now, the implication of the government making those decisions is that because the government has the legal monopoly of force, of violence, if the government tells you what to make, for whom, at what price, using what resources, at what time, and you don't want to do that, well, the government can fine you or put you in jail or ultimately execute you. But if private persons are to make those decisions. I want you to make such and such for me at such and such a price using these resources at this time and whatnot. The only way I can get you to do that is by offering to give you something in exchange that you want more than what you would want, what you'd make for me. So the one is what I call the violent means of exchange. The other is the peaceful means of exchange. So that's how you really distinguish socialism from capitalism. Now, in terms of environmental track records, the capitalist or more free market countries in this world have much better environmental track records than the more socialist or communistic countries. And I discuss that at some length in the introductory part of my booklet, Is Capitalism Bad for the Environment?, which is available from our online store at cornwallalliance.org. But take, for example, the former Soviet Union reversed the flow of a couple of rivers in order to try to make bad agricultural land good. And in the by doing that, they deprived the Aral Sea, which once was the sixth largest salt sea or salt lake in the world, of most of its water. They reduced its surface area by over 70%. They reduced its total water content by about 80%. They increased its salinity so much that it killed almost everything in it. And the result was salt-filled dust storms covering thousands of square miles all around the lake that ruined formerly wonderful agricultural land. It's one of the worst environmental disasters the world has ever seen since Noah's flood. Right.
Yeah, maybe second only to Chernobyl.
Yeah, well, no, actually, it's much worse than Chernobyl. Only 32 people died as a result of Chernobyl. And in fact, as a result of the problems from the Aral Sea, millions of people have gone without food because the agricultural areas wouldn't work anymore. So it's actually worse than Chernobyl. But Chernobyl was horrendous too. No nuclear accident in any capitalist free market sort of a country has begun to compare with what Chernobyl did.
Well, so, and as with the Ural Sea situation and Chernobyl, you've got a secretive top end government that's trying to control everything and make all the decisions, and they don't want people to know what they've done.
And the Three Gorges Dam on the Yangtze River in China is another example of just horrendous environmental destruction done by a socialist government. And you know what? When a private company does something that hurts the environment, you can complain to your government. You can sue that company. You can complain. The government can bring regulations. You can do something about it. When you're in a socialist country where the government runs everything, good luck with your complaints.
Right. Yeah, that you might end up in cement somewhere if you make that complaint too loudly. Well, let me go back to the on the climate thing, because, again, in this debate, the debates last week, they keep changing the name. It was global warming. Now it's climate change. And I think they're trying to rebrand it some other way. But
weather weirding.
Yeah. From your understanding and the understanding of Cornwall Alliance, do we really have a big climate problem?
No. We have ongoing weather problems. They've happened all through Earth's history. They'll continue happening all through Earth's history. There's, frankly, nothing we can do about them except to build stronger homes and businesses and things like that and build them in better places where they're less vulnerable to such problems. But, you know, basically, has global average temperature increased in the last 150 years or so? Yeah, certainly it has. Do human emissions of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere from burning fossil fuels probably make the world a little bit warmer than it otherwise would be? Yeah, I'm quite persuaded of that. I think that's basic physics. But the really interesting questions are how much warmer, what are the consequences, and would trying to reduce that warming cost more or less than the benefits of trying to reduce that warming? And on each of those questions, the answers are it warms it so little as not to be significant. The risks from that in terms of that warming are far less than the benefits of the warming, because the warming increases It lengthens growing seasons. It allows us to grow things in higher latitudes and higher altitudes, those things. And the costs of trying to reduce that warming would far exceed the benefits of trying to reduce that warming. And all of that's not to mention the fact that that added carbon dioxide in the atmosphere makes all the plants in the world grow better, which means more food for everything that eats plants and everything that eats anything that eats plants. And the people who benefit from that more than anybody else are the world's poor, because abundant food is crucially important for them. Getting food to them inexpensively and reliably is extremely important. And more CO2 in the atmosphere and warmer temperatures make for more food growing in the world. This is why the Cornwall Alliance has been arguing, and we've put a number of major papers on our website, cornwallalliance.org, as well as hundreds of short articles on this. We've been arguing that it makes no sense whatsoever to try to bring down global temperatures by substituting diffuse, unreliable, more expensive wind, solar, and other renewable energy sources for the abundant, affordable, reliable fossil fuels that at present provide about 85% of all energy consumed in the world and the vast majority of the electricity as well. So you can't overcome poverty without abundant, affordable, reliable energy.
Absolutely.
And renewables just won't provide it.
All right, so let me ask you this. Are all of these candidates who are saying that this is the existential crisis of our time, are they all deluded?
Well, you know, I don't like to comment about particular political candidates, but the fact is simple. Climate change is not an existential threat. Even according to the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is, you know, the consensus body, if you look at even its own data, climate change is not something that's going to cost more than a couple or 3% of global domestic product, you know, gross domestic product for the world. And by the end of this century, people will be so much wealthier because of economic growth between now and then that they will be able to adapt, regardless whether the world is warmer or cooler. They'll be able to adapt, and they'll have far, far, far fewer risks related to climate, even if the amount of warming that the IPCC predicts happens. And we don't think that that's going to happen.
Yeah. Let me put our phone number out again, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, if you want to call in and get involved in the conversation. Calvin Beissner of the Cornwall Alliance is my guest this last segment of the broadcast. Well, let's switch back to socialism for just a minute. Based on the things, and not asking you to comment on political candidates here, but based on some of the things that you have heard from the political candidates who are out there, particularly the Democrat side, are the things that they are proposing socialism?
They are socialistic, okay? They certainly lean heavily toward the socialism end of that spectrum between socialism and capitalism. You know, the Green New Deal is far more about redistributing wealth, about taking from the wealthier and giving to the poorer, than it is about doing anything about climate. Frankly, if you just read the text, there's more in it about wealth redistribution than there is about doing anything about climate. That's consistently the case with what all of these folks have been saying. You know, Hickenlooper, for instance, in that clip that you played at the start of the show, he wanted to distance himself from socialism, but he says that he does believe that health care is a right. Now, I address that in my booklet, Social Justice versus Biblical Justice, How Good Intentions Undermine Justice and Gospel. The biblical definition of justice is rendering to everyone his due, and yet we can't argue that everybody is due health care. And the actual meaning of justice is preventing harm. Our real rights are rights against being harmed. You shall not steal. That means people have a right not to have their property taken away. You shall not murder. It means people have a right not to be killed or injured, and so on. But we don't actually have rights to positive benefits. And in fact, the only way for government to give positive benefits to Smith
is for it to take those positive benefits from Jones, which means it has to violate real rights in order to meet imagined rights. The church and private individuals are to do charity, and providing health care to those who can't afford it, that's a charitable thing to do. It's a good thing to do. We should all be involved in that. But when government does it, it does it by forcibly taking from some people what belongs to them and giving it to others to whom it doesn't belong, and that violates the Eighth Commandment, you shall not steal, which doesn't say you shall not steal unless you are the government.
Exactly. Well, let's the phones. Frances is on the line from Georgia. She's got a comment about socialism versus modern capitalism. Frances, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much. I want to say I like the way your guest framed the questions of capitalism and socialism by showing the two extremes, and that's a great thing. But from my point of view as a Christian, there is no righteousness in either one of them. There is no righteousness in socialism or communism or capitalism. And I think the best is a thoughtful blend of both. I think there needs to be government control over something. And one great example I'm going to cite is the USDA. I mean, that is somewhat of a socialist organization that determines what our meats look like, what kind of meat we can sell, what kind of produce people can sell. That's somewhat of a socialist idea. If we were just to leave it to individuals, say, listen, I'm going to harvest and sell whatever I want, population would be at risk. So there needs to be a good blend, because there is no righteousness except that made available by God through Christ.
So, Francis,
you know, a good blend is what we need.
Francis, thanks for your call. Cal, would you like to comment on that?
First of all, amen. There is no righteousness in any particular economic system at all. And I'm totally with Francis on that. Now, what I would argue is that when the USDA, for example, says we're going to have quality control on meats that are sold, or when the Food and Drug Administration says we're going to test drugs before they're sold to the public to make sure that they don't cause harm and things like that, that's not socialism. That's government doing its God-ordained role of enforcing justice. Now, justice prohibits my doing injury to others. Justice prohibits my stealing from them, harming them physically, things like that. And so if I'm selling food that is tainted, if I'm selling drugs that are harmful, and you know people are not informed about the risks, I am harming them. I'm doing them an injustice, and it's perfectly legitimate for the government to prevent my doing that, to prohibit it, and to punish it if I do it. But that's not socialism. Socialism is specifically government answering the question, who makes what for whom, at what price, using what resources, at what time? That's socialism. And that's not what the FDA does. It's not what the USDA does. The USDA and the FDA say, look, if you're going to make these products, you have to meet these safety standards. That's all.
So, Cal, in our last 30 seconds or so, you mentioned a booklet that you've got. Give us more information about how our listeners can get access to that.
Yeah, two booklets. Is Capitalism Bad for the Environment and Social Justice versus Biblical Justice? Both are in our online shop at cornwallalliance.org.
And that's cornwallalliance.org. Calvin Beisner with the Cornwall Alliance, thank you so much for taking time today. This time went really quickly. Well, this is Evan Fowler. Thanks for listening to Washington Watch today. We'll see you next time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.